I'd like to start so we don't take any more time out of Hazara. Last thing we mentioned was the question of whether there would be a chiyuv bedika if you think that there's only an Isser Derabbanan, meaning to say that if you maintain that Tolayim mixed in are a Taroves, and therefore it's only a Din Derabbanan that one has to check. In other words, I should say it that way. It's not Din D'Rabbanan, one has to check. If there is a bug here, one is only violated in Nisar D'Rabbanan, because Midiraisa, it is Batel, because it's a the Din that Birya's Anabatel is only a Din D'Rabbanan. So is there a Chi of Bedika, Makomira Matsoi, where the potential Isser is a Nisar D'Rabbanan? Or no, maybe the Chi of Bedika B'makom mira matzui is only when the potential violation is an iser deraisa, like bedika sareya for trefos, or asking the shochet in the case of nevela. But when the potential iser is only an iser derabanan, then mehechatesi, there is a din achovas bedika. So again, if we were to assume that in the case of tolayim we're dealing with an iser derabanan because midiraisa there is a tarovas, it's only a birya shaila. Is there a chi of bedik? And I mentioned that this seems to be a machlokas achronim, and I thought maybe you could bring a raya from the Gra that you have to be machmir, because the Gra cites as the source for the chi of bedik of b'makom mira matzoi the Gemara Psachim, which says v'lashayle, you should ask even in the situation where a house has a cheskas baduk, you should nevertheless inquire, and the idea being that I was assuming that it's only Nisar D'Rabbanan because Midiraisa Bittel Ba'al Masagi, and presumably the Gemara is talking about where you did Bittel. So I spoke to Rabbi Willig about this question, and he said, no, maybe the Gemara is talking about. On that Gemara. Okay. Geshmaks, that's my focus. We showed him the Ravid versus who?
He quotes the Balmor.
Whether that Gemara is talking about the Reis or Drabanan. Okay, so Rabbi Willig's Dechia was, no, maybe there's no Chiyav when it's only a Din Drabanan, and apparently, even if we accept the Makor of the Gra, that might be Tali on the Machlokas between the Balmor and the Ravid. I'll have to look that up. I wasn't aware of that. Now, the Shulchan Aruch writes that in Sif Dalad, in the name of the Rashba, that if you find three tolayim in something, let's say a soup, then this product is considered bechezkas mitulayim, and therefore you can't eat it anymore. Now, obviously, we're talking about a case where it can't be checked. If you could check it, so you could check it and eat it. And any part of this component that could be checked, for example, if you can filter the broth of the soup, so then you could eat the broth. But the parts that can't be checked can't be eaten, because when you have three tolayim, then we assume that if there are three, there are probably more. Now, as we pointed out earlier, this clearly indicates that the Mechaber's view is that this din of birya not being batel applies even in a min b'shein omino. We're not talking about bug soup, we're talking about vegetable soup. So the bugs with respect to the vegetables are clearly min b'shein omino, and nevertheless, he applies the principle of birya. However, as we noted, not all Rishonim agree to this. The Isser Behetar writes clearly, or at least, I should say, the Darkei Moshe's understanding of the Isser Behetar. This is a Darkei Moshe in Simen Kuf Aleph, so we'll see it next week, God willing. But the Darkei Moshe understands that the Isser Behetar understands that according to the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam, a birya would be batel if it's min b'she'en omina. Why would that be? Because the Rambam writes that he thinks that min b'she'en omina, we don't say dvarim chashuvim are batel, like chaticha, for example. And he brings a raya from Tevel. Tevel's an iser misa, and yet, and it's a davar she'esh lo matirin, and yet we say for min b'she'en omina it's batel. So kol shekein, when it comes to other dvarim chashuvim, which are not a situation of davar she'esh lo matirin, we know for davar she'esh lo matirin safek aser, right? And therefore other dvarim chashuvim safek mutter. And moreover, usually it's not as chamor of an iser as tavel, and it's not davar she'esh lo matirin. So certainly min b'shein omino would not be batel. Now, if you follow that view of the Isser V'Hatter, who again claims that this is the view of the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam as well, so then this Shaila wouldn't even begin. Meaning to say, our whole sugya, assuming for a moment that we're dealing with Tarovos, our whole shir, do you have to check, don't you have to check, how do you have to check, all those, is that the whole sugya isn't relevant, right? Because that's all the cases that we've been talking about, again, assuming it's a Tarovos, are all min b'shein umino. So it is interesting that the whole topic doesn't even begin. Now, the Rashba, as the Darkei Moshe himself notes, disagrees with this Isser V'Hatter. Why not? What about the Kal V'Chomer? So we'll see. The Taz in Siman Kaf Aleph deals with this and tells us why Darvish Yesh Lo Matirin might be different, why there's no Kal V'Chomer from Darvish Yesh Lo Matirin. But just to note now, this whole sugya that we're talking about, and this might be another Snif L'Hakel, especially if you think that we're dealing with a Taroves, this whole sugya is only, this whole Chiddush that you have to do, that Birya Eina B'Teila, right, that a bug isn't batel in vegetable soup, that's only assuming the position of the Rashba that birya is not batel in min b'shein umino. Now, as I mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch writes, so let's summarize and then we'll take a step back. So what are some of the halachos that we've seen so far in terms of when do you have to do a bedika and when don't you have to do a bedika? So if you want to take a look at the Badi HaShulchan and Sifkata Memvav, he summarizes the basic rules, and most of these emerge pretty explicitly from the Shulchan Aruch earlier and the Shach over there. And the rules are as follows. If tola'im are miyot she'eno matzui, so then l'chatchila you don't have to do a bedika, so you don't have to check for, you know, string beans or maybe, you know, if you're eating an apple or the like. Why? Even though there might be bugs here, maybe there's a worm inside your apple. So are you allowed to take a bite into a whole apple? Sometimes there are worms. The answer is, it's a miyacheno matzoi, so I'm not chayv to check. I don't have to cut the apple open to see, maybe there's a worm in here. No, even though there's a small possibility, it's a miyacheno matzoi, you're not chayv to do bedika. We'll talk about how what constitutes a miyacheno matzoi shortly. If there is a miyad hamatzoi, so then we said there's a chiyav derabanan to check. Meaning to say, midaraisi, you can be somech on the rov, midarabanan, you should check. Just like bedika of the raya. If it's not even a miyad hamatzoi, but if it's a safek hashakul, 50% chance there's a bug here, 50% chance there isn't, or you don't know the percentages, so as far as you're concerned, there's a safek hashakul, so then, there's a chiyav midaraisa to check, meaning to say, I can't eat this midaraisa because there's a safek isser. Maybe there is an isser here in this bite of food that I'm going to take, and therefore, in that case, there's a chiyav bedika midaraisa. But even in that case, bidiyaved, if it was cooked and no longer checkable, you could be mako. Why? As we said before, there's a seka, safek if there was a bug here, safek if there wasn't, vimtin salomer, there was a bug here, even if the broccoli that you made your broccoli kugel out of, assuming, let's say, you put the broccoli kugel in a blender or the like, so even if there was a bug here, even if it's 50% chance that broccolis have bugs, but then maybe it was in the process of cooking, being prepared for cooking, maybe it was broken up, and therefore in nimuach and the like, so therefore it would be mutter. And finally, if you had a situation where it's hufsaku betolayim, so then even if it's nisbashel, there's only a single safek, and memela you have to be machmir, and that's what the Rashba over here that the Shulchan Aruch is quoting is saying, since you found three bugs in your soup, I think this once happened when I was in KBY, right? Only once, that I recall. So somebody found a bug, then another person found a bug, then another person found a bug. Okay, can't eat the rest of the soup. Right now, at this point, the soup is huchsak betolayim, and the sveik sveika, there's no longer any sveik sveika anymore, because the fact that you found three tells us that there's a good chance that there are more. Yeah?
Let's say somebody introduced a new fruit to the world, and we don't really know whether it would have bugs. Do you assume it's not a bishagul, or can we say rogue food don't have bugs?
I mean, practically, just check. I don't think that when we're speaking about rove, it's not like a ruba dalmat. It's a rove that we check. We'll talk about the limut eschus a little later on, but certainly in the olden days, there were lots of cases where there wasn't a rove hatter, right? It's not like a rove on all fruit that they're not infested. Each fruit, you can figure out whether there's a rove or there isn't a rove, or maybe there'll be a suffix, like we talked about last time. Yeah.
How fatty do we go with each?
So that's a good question.
Iceberg lettuce is romaine lettuce.
So I would assume that you should be as specific as you possibly can. So yes, we would. The rate of infestation on romaine lettuce has no effect on iceberg lettuce. And if there's no miyut hamatzoh in iceberg, the fact that there is a miyut hamatzoh in romaine is irrelevant. Iceberg still wouldn't need to be checked.
Do you judge based on each leaf or the entire?
We're going to get there. That's the question. We'll get there. That is an ikker, a major, major question that's going to, that the practical ramifications of these laws is going to largely hinge on that question. Yes?
Couldn't you just make something from a miyut hamatzoh by washing it really well and then not?
We're going to talk about that as well. When do you determine the miyut hamatzoh, before washing or after washing? That's correct. Get there. Okay, great. So the Mechaber Paskin that is considered Hochzak Tolaim when there are three bugs. So the Taz in Sifkat and Vav writes that the Beis Yosef quotes a Tshuva Sarajba that you have to be Machmir even for two. And the Bach thinks you should follow this. Why? Because there is a suffix whether two or three is a Chazaka. It's a Machlokas, Rebbe, Rabbanan, and a Gemara. And therefore, the Tshuva Sarajba as quoted by the Bach had the Girsa two. So the Taz says, no, it's certainly a Taz Sofer in the Rashba, and it shouldn't say two bugs are a Chazaka, but three bugs are a Chazaka. Why? Because the Rush writes that we only time we're ever Machmir for the view of Rebbe, that two is a Chazaka, is in Nisuin or Mila, when you're dealing with an issue of Safek Nefashos Lahakel. So there, because we're concerned about Safek Nefashos, we're Machmir, and Choshesh that two times is a Chazaka. But for all other things, we assume three is a Chazaka. And therefore, over here, the correct Girsa in the Rashba, and this is our Girsa in the Shulchan Aruch, is three bugs. It is interesting, you could be Docha the Raya from the Rashba himself. If you look at the Rashba in Yevamos, on that Gemara, the Rashba writes that, not like the Rash, the Rashba writes that each case in halacha, we figure out whether we should follow two or three. So for example, he writes that for vestos, we assume three. Why? Because vestos are derabanan. The implication was that if vestos are deraisa, we would be choshesh, that two times is a veses kavua. That being the case, you could argue that over here, where the concern is an iser deraisa, tolaim, you should be machmir. So the Taz is proof, well, maybe a proof within the Rashba isn't necessarily a good proof, a proof from the Rush isn't a good proof within the Rashba. Nevertheless, it could be three for a different reason, like we've been talking about, that if this is a Din D'Rabbanan Shaila anyway, of Birya, so then even the Rashba would concede, though not necessarily for the reason that the way the Taz presents it. So now we have to deal with the question that you've all been waiting for, which is, what is Amir Hamatzoy? What is a miyut hamatzoh? We keep on saying there's a din, derabanan, that you're obligated to do bedikos, b'makom miyut hamatzoh. Well, what is a miyut hamatzoh? So, it's not very clear. If you look at the Tshuvas HaRivash, Kuf Tzadi Aleph, he writes that it's karov lemechtza, and it's ragilios. It almost sounds like if it's 49% infested, you're not chayav to do a bedika. Now, that would be interesting, because midrash you're chayav to do a bedika if it's 51%. And then to say they were misakin with Rabbanan for 49%, but maybe, in Achanami. Anyway, it's not clear, because when he says karov lemechtza, how literal does he mean? But it sounds like that the Rivash would be relatively lenient in this case. The fact is that if most of the time, let's say noticeably most of the time, this lettuce doesn't have bugs in it, then according to the Rivash, there would be no chi of bedika. It's not karov lemechtza. The Mishkanos Yaakov is the first to deal with this explicitly. It's in Yaradeya Simon Yud Zayin. And he writes that it's 10%. Miyut hamatzoh is 10%. And everybody likes to quote that shir. Shlomo Zalman quoted it. Rav Schechter quotes it. Rav Willa quotes it. The Rav. We'll tell you about what the Rav said in a minute. But 10% is the shir. Now, it's very interesting that Rav Shechter quotes that the Rav would held that it was 14.5%. Where did he come up with that? 14.5%. The answer is that he investigated what percentage of cows slaughtered in Boston, or I guess in the Rav's time, had sirchos. And the answer was apparently 14.5%. So he says, well, we know that sirchos in the lungs are mir ha-matzui, so 14.5% of sirchos, that must be what a mir ha-matzui is. So one could wonder about that analysis, but his point was, we have no other way to figure this out. In other words, everything is made up in this sugya. The Rishonim, the earlier Achronim, don't tell you what a mir ha-matzui is. So the best we could do is go by something we know to be a mir ha-matzui, and that's sirchos, that's trefos in the raya. And therefore, that's what we should follow. So that was the Rav's suggestion. Rav Vosner, in Shevet Alevi Yardea, Chelek Dalid, Simen Pe Aleph, makes a very powerful and convincing point. He says that it doesn't really make sense that it's percentages. It must be that there's a subjective approach. What seems like a common occurrence? Because if there was a percentage, then again, there the Rishonim, the Achronim, somebody before the Mishkanos Yaakov should have suggested a number. The fact that Mishkanos Yaakov has some interesting rayos, but the fact that nobody said it until him would suggest that if it's matzui. Now, what's matzui? Does it seem matzui? Does this seem common? The way he sort of says it is this matzui harbei, and does it... The problem with this Mahalich, though it seems very compelling into the sources, is it's very hard to figure out what you practically do. Is this matzui? I don't know. I think it's matzui. You do think it's matzui? What's matzui? We have a very difficult time in our modern world dealing with these types of subjective requirements. That we've shown him didn't seem to be bothered by, you know, nobody noticed, nobody started talking about the size of the kezias also until the last couple hundred years. But we have a hard time, and that's why practically I think most poskim do accept the shear of the Mishkanos Yaakov, both because it seems to be correct, and also because we don't really have any other choice, any other good possibility. Rav Eliashiv says it's less than 10%. That's based off of also his assessment of the dikos in the lungs. Yeah, you had a...
First of all, I think about 15% of first of all.
Okay.
And but let's say you have... Like you suggested last time, that some batches are matzoi.
Okay, so then that's going to be... We're going to get back to that question, but that's a good question. Pashup Shad is Safik Mira Matzoi, so you should be able to be Mako. Because Safik Rabban Mahakel, unless you said this is considered a Safik Hussar Yadiyah, in which case you'd have to be Mahmir. Now... Okay, let's assume for the moment it's 10%, but the big question is 10% of what? So this too, remarkably, is a question that, as far as I could tell, was only explicitly addressed in the last couple of decades. Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva about this in Chelek Beis of Mincha Shlomo Simen Samach Gimel, and he wonders about this, and he says, you know, I really don't know. It would seem to be that if it's a head of broccoli or a head of lettuce, you have to do 10% of heads of lettuce, because if you were to eat this whole head of lettuce, then and 10% of such heads were infested, then you'd have to do it. But he's not so sure. He says, "Mistaber dekevan shimba lechol es kol haaguda shel chasa tzrichim lachshosh shehi metulas v'taon bedika memela iyafshar gam latir aleachas mepnei atam shekineged ze lecha klal mir hamatzui." Now, he considers two other possibilities which he rejects. One possibility is that we look at serving size. And he thinks that there's no basis for that. It seems very random and arbitrary. The other possibility is you should look at every bite. And he says that's ridiculous. Then maybe every half a bite, whatever it is. So it's interesting that in that tshuva he refers to the svara of two of our Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Willett. Rabbi Shechter says you look at serving size. After all, what else are you going to look at? You have to be, you're about to eat a meal, and you're about to eat salad during your meal. So are you allowed to eat the salad or not? Do you have to check it or not? Well, it depends. If there's a 10% chance that you'll be eating a bug, if you don't check it. So then you have to check it. So it goes by serving size, and not just general serving size, but your serving size, what you're about to eat. So if I'm about to eat a salad with romaine lettuce that has 3 leaves of lettuce, so then if in 30 leaves of lettuce on average there is not one bug, so then I don't have to check the romaine lettuce for my salad. If I'm not going to eat the salad as a side dish, my whole meal is going to be a salad, and I'm going to eat 10 big romaine lettuce leaves, so then it'll have to be 10% of 100, right? So each and every case will be dependent on what he does. That relates to his shita, for example, for kopa pots. One of the reasons why, though Rabbi Schachter is machmir, that water in New York City needs bedika, or filtration, because of the chash tolayim. Well, what about if I want to brush my teeth? Or wash the dishes? So Rabbi Schachter thinks that here you could be mako. Why? Because in a typical meal, let's say I'm going to have 16 ounces of water. So then, if there was on average one kopa pot in every 160 ounces of water, then the water would require bedika, and that is the case. And we'll talk about at the end of this year whether it is the case. We'll talk about the actual percentages. But let's assume for the moment that in 160 ounces of water, there's generally on average one bug. So therefore, if I want to have drink 16 ounces of water at my meal, then I'll need to do bedika. But what about brushing my teeth? Well, how much water goes on your toothbrush? Especially, you know, you shake it out afterwards. I don't know, a tenth of an ounce, you know, 1% of an, I don't know what it is. But whatever it is, assuming that in that tiny, tiny amount, there is not a mir hamatzoy of tolayim, so then you don't have to filter your water for toothbrushing or even for washing dishes. Washing dishes, so most of the water drains off. Now, it's possible that, you know, a couple of drops of water remain on the bottom that melt, you know, that evaporate in the light. Well, okay, is there mira matzoy on 3 drops of water that are going to remain at the bottom of my cup after I've washed it? The answer is, assuming no, and presumably there isn't, so then it's okay to wash with unfiltered water. So in each and every case, you have to decide how much you're going to drink, how much you're going to eat, and based off of that, determine the mira matzoy.
Well, what Rochelle was saying is you're preparing a large serving salad for...
I think you do each person. I think each person at that meal. So you don't have to... Because, again, can I eat the salad? The question's on me. It's not on the cook. It's on me. Am I allowed to eat the salad? So if in 10% of what I'm going to eat, or if what I'm going to eat has less than 10%...
So if there's an assumption that everyone who's going to be eating the salad will be eating a small amount, then you...
So, in Achanami, I would think that's what he would say. Okay, you might want to be safe, but at least theoretically, I would think that's the halacha according to Rabbi Schachter. Rabbi Willig, as Rabbi Willig likes to say, Rav Shlomo Zalman's reductio ad absurdum is my shita. It's actually on two varts that he says in that tshuva. This is one of them. The other relates to his bedikas chametz, which I'll get to shortly. That Rav Shlomo Zalman says it can't be that in every bite. Rav Willig says no. Why not? In other words, I'm about to eat a bite of salad. I'm about to eat a bite of lasagna with spinach. So now, is there a 10% chance that this bite that I'm about to eat has a bug? If the answer is no, so it should be much. I'm allowed to put the bite in my mouth. The fact that in a minute from now, I'm going to eat another bite, that is not the relevant question. Right now, on my bite, 10%, so no. Now, this is obviously leads to a very lenient position, meaning to say there aren't so many grade A vegetables that are infested to such an extent that 10% of bites actually are infested. So that's what I said before. The question of A, how much of miramatsu is, and B, how miramatsu of what, is really going to significantly affect what vegetables practically you think need to be checked. No, that's irrelevant. I'm dining on this bite. What does pras have to do with it? That's for matzah. That's nothing to do. In other words, if you understand, you see, this gets back to a basic question, which we'll get back to what we'll talk about shortly. But the question is, how do you... Maisa chila isn't what's relevant. This is a chovas bedika on the person before he's about to do something, right? And therefore, the question is this act, what I'm about to do. Now, it doesn't halachically, the fact that this is an achila is irrelevant. The fact that the question at hand is, what I'm about to do, this maisa, is that chayav am I chayiv to do bedika? And if the answer is no, then the answer is no. Now again, these are, yeah.
Isn't it, are you asking me because you shouldn't even be chayiv for eating the bug in that case?
No, I'm saying because that's all one ma'isachila.
He's saying that it should go, the chayiv bedika should be in what's considered a ma'isachila. So I think Rabbi Willig understands that this has nothing to do per se with the ma'isachila. Is this halacha of mira matzoi is shaykh for all aspects of halacha, shchita and tzitzis and the like. And since it's a chiyuv bedika on negavra and doesn't relate to a maisa, so it doesn't relate. It relates to what he's about to do as opposed to the halachic definition of achila. But I hear you can the shita that you're suggesting of kedechilas prasa, fourth shita, is a reasonable shita. And again, as you see from the poskim, it's really hard to know what to do. They're very little rios, especially as we noted that this idea that there is even a chiyuv bedika b'makom mira matzoi is not even a forish in shas anywhere.
If we're going to assume that the question is each bite, so then wouldn't that lead to a tremendous chumra in that I'm asking about this bite? So I don't think that there are 60 bugs worth in each bite that you actually dealt with the sinas tam in the rice at that point.
No, because
we're not likely to have such a shadow.
But
if you did, you'd have a problem. But if you would not have a shadow in the first place.
Assuming your bugs are less than 160th of more than 160th of a bite.
No, so the answer that
even if it would be, you would check for it.
The answer that he's saying is a chovas bedika on this food. If I'm about to do a maisa that might actually be aser, can I be somech on rov? The answer is if alpi midiraisa, if alpi rov it's mutter, I could do it. And if there's a 10% chance it's aser, midirabanan, I shouldn't do it without checking.
I understand, but if everyone's talking about a case where you do have, whether a heavily infested vegetable that is, that 10% of bites have a bug in it, so
right.
Then at that point, you again, assuming that the bugs are reasonably sized, so you're not going to be dealing with...
You're saying because you chew it? I don't know what you're asking.
I'm saying that, I'm not sure how big your bites are, but assuming that a bite is less than the volume of 60 bucks. So then... Everyone who's talking about this being an Isidur abundant because of Virya, if you get an Isidur abundant, it's an Isidur Isidur. Because if you're asking about this bite, this
no
bite.
No same time, Wolfgang. No same time. There's no, if it's. The only issue is on the side that there's no, that it's not a Tarel Ves. You're right. Or Isidur abundant elsewhere. I don't think you should. Yeah.
The Shomar Sakbe, has got three worms, right?
Yes.
That's clearly how do you.
That's
that?
A different point. You're saying you're the fact is that now you could say well Cheskas told on just because I found three bugs in a pot doesn't tell me each bite. So the idea of you're correct and you can make that point. I think the idea though is that once the pot has three bugs in it, there's a good chance that every bite might have a bug. That's what the Chazaka does for you. You're saying that would be wrong.
Like, wouldn't follow for.
I think it could follow. I could hear your. I hear your Arab. But I don't think it's a pircha. Okay.
Can we use Adaras of Mira Matzah from other places in Jazz?
Could we what?
Could we use Adaras of Mira Matzah from other places?
Could we use what?
Adaras of Mira Matzah,
okay.
Or something like that.
Well, where the term Mira Matzah isn't said in terms of Leda, is it? You're talking about that Magad Mishnah.
No, I'm going to think. Doesn't it come up in Shitas Reb Meir in Halachos Shel Yehuda?
Well, according to Tosfos. But it doesn't even... So, but we don't know what those are either.
Okay.
As far as I know. If there is a Hagdara, then that would be an interesting Raya. Okay. Yeah.
You're saying if you have a cafeteria, let's say that, cafeteria, the cook is not allowed to serve, but he knows that Tony's going to eat it. It's on him. He's not allowed to serve it.
If the person, then maybe he shouldn't be able to. If there's 1% bugs. I mean, he's going to say if it's not a mira matzah, he could serve the food. Nobody would say that. Nobody says so. He's in a cafeteria, so he's serving 1,000 people. So, and he knows 1 out of 1,000 of these things are going to be. So now he can't serve that. No, because since everybody's acting better when they eat this food, so that's his job. His job as a mashkiach is to make sure that every bite everybody takes is they're not doing anything wrong by eating those bites. The fact that 1 out of 1,000 people in this cafeteria will eat a bug, that's not his problem. I don't think, because he's not doing, his job is to ensure that every, all, that it's permitted, that when everybody takes a bite, what they're doing is permitted. Otherwise, in and of herself, you couldn't possibly, whenever you had a... Yes, I don't know. I don't think anyone says that. That seems very far-fetched.
Well, I was saying, what about the fact you said that the Namath Paralysis is mean amongst us? So what's over here that the Ryan Paralysis and the Ryan Paralysis and like pushes it aside, like two others.
What do you mean? What? Who doesn't agree to what?
You said the rabbi doesn't agree to that for me. The other reason, by the way, is also.
So that's a good question. I don't know. I don't have a resolution to the Stira and the Rashba, but that's going to make it more kal. In other words, there might not then be any makor if you learn like that Rashba for any bedikos. Yeah, yeah. I told you in terms of the Stira and the Rashba, I'm not sure, but Lamaisa, again, on the those other studim would be studim lahakam, not studim lahmir. Okay. Now, here's a very practical question that comes up all the time, which is the following. I'm eating at somebody else's house, and they don't necessarily have the same standards that I do in terms of dikas tolayim. So there's kugel and salad and soup and the like, and who knows what they did. So am I allowed to eat from that food? So, as we noted last time, to the extent that it's still shayach to do bedika, so obviously there's a chiv upon me to do bedika. However, very frequently, dishes that are cooked, even salad, if there's salad dressing on it that has like pepper and other small things on it, make it practically impossible to check at this point. Meaning to say, even things that should have been checked originally, like spinach or broccoli or lettuce or the like, but now it's too late. So what's the halacha? So as we saw, based off the Shulchan Aruch L'chor, it should be mutter. Usually you'll have a sveik sveika. Now, maybe we should be machmir. This is a tzad we said before.
Does the sveik sveika apply to salads also?
No, the sveik sveika, good point, I was going to get there. Sveik sveika there, it's a single suffix, but so there you would have to... So therefore, if it's actually 50% infested, you couldn't eat the salad because there's no reason to assume 50% again, presumably after being washed. However you define 50%, but then you'd only have a single suffix. There's no reason to assume that the bugs melted in preparation of a garden salad. So, as far as I know. So therefore there would only be a single suffix in that case. But if you can't check anymore, we're not going to go by 10%, we're going to go by 50%. The takana of bedika, b'makom mir hamatzui, was a takana where it's possible to do bedika. If, in fact, it is impossible to do bedika at this point in time, so then we're going to go back to the deraisa shir. So it would be 50%. Now, maybe, though, we should be machmir, let's say in the case of the... Let's take broccoli kugel. So they went ahead and they bought ShopRite brand frozen broccoli, threw it in a blender, and made it into a kugel. So now, maybe we would have to be machmir because of the following. Because why is this mutter in the end of the day? It's mutter because of bittel. And ein mevatlin is a luchatchila. So as you noted before, when we said this, there are a lot of stud in lahakel. Number one, is in the end of the day, no. First of all, even if it is bitulus al-chatchila, it's not, according to the Taz, since you didn't know about it, it wouldn't be, the knas wouldn't apply. And moreover, like we said before, they're not mechavein, it's not mezid, usually. And moreover, like we said before, the heter, you don't even need to come onto bitul for this to be a heter, for this to be mutter. And finally, because yesh almi lismoch, even if you yourself would want to check your spinach and your broccoli, but as we saw before, there are studim lahakel in terms of the what types of bugs, the size of the bugs, the placey, and the Rabbi Willig Shita, and all, you put all the different studim together, there are a lot of studim lahakel, and therefore we know that when it comes to knassos, we find, for example, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos and the Knas of Maisa Shabbos, so if there are Mekilim, even if you wouldn't follow those Mekilim L'chatchila, but the Evid, once it's made, one could follow those Mekilim. So it's pretty hard to imagine that in a case where where this should have been checked, but it was not checked, but it no longer can be checked, that b'di'eved, you couldn't eat it. And that's why Shlomo Zalman writes also in that same tshuva, nira de'etzel mi she'avar uvishel be'akrai, da-da-da. And he writes that v'rak lismoch al eze rabbanim, he puts that in quotes, shemoter, achar kach levashel levatel, v'zeh gam nasev or eile, shehem somchen aleihem, yitachin shememele moter gam lacherim lachol sham, afal pisha lechatchila, lo ha'yu somchen al osam harabbanim, v'tziraf imash em shebedika tova v'nechona hu toreach gadol me'od, u'meniyam izeh, he rock beglav tircha yaseira. Now there's a reason why the people aren't doing the bedika. He's even assuming that they know they're supposed to, but they don't. But it's not because they're doing it because it's too tedious. V'lo mipnei shirotzim lehanos gam min ha'iser. It's not like anybody's trying to enjoy the taste of the bugs. So then shareizem ma'us me'od etzol kol adam v'chia gav ne'efshar d'gam zecha d'gam lo chashiv k'mevatel esu l'chatchila. The chayin erel and the estati shapir motor gam lacherim. Yeah.
Two questions. First of all,
now again, all this is assuming that it can no longer be checked. This isn't always. It isn't always true. Yeah.
So first of all, does that mean that when they put the salad in front of you, so you can take as much as you want, or that's more like an eitza in terms of not?
No, I don't know. I wouldn't think. I think again, assuming that the salad is no longer checkable. I don't know why you couldn't take as much as you want, no?
I'm saying this isn't just an aid to, like, to...
I don't know. As far as I could tell, I don't know why. Once the salad is no longer checkable, so assuming that it's al pi rov, there's no tolaim here, why can't you, at this point, follow the rov?
And also, would you have to clarify with them or ask them, like, did you wash the lettuce or...
Well, if it's going to be mutter either way, then you wouldn't need to clarify. If it can still be checked, right? Again, a lot of times the raw salad, it can be checked. If it could still be checked, then you shouldn't eat it until you clarify that point. Okay. So, yeah.
Two questions. One, let's say on Shabbos, checking might involve certain border shalom. No?
Why?
Unless you find the bugs, or what, you just from the interview, you would take the bug out.
Well, so you're right. I mean, the famous taz about taking out the fly with the soup, right? There's mixture. So taka and hochel Shabbos, if you haven't fly in the soup, there's a machlokas aposkim about taking it out. The taz and the chazanishin alike. Usually, it's not a shaila. You're checking lettuce, so you see a piece of a bug on a lettuce. So you could. There's definitely a way to solve that problem practically without doing
both.
You can eat around it, you can, I mean, again, if you rinse it underwater, right, so also, that's a shayla, ochel mitoch tzol, so mitoch ochel, samach lezuda, and the like, but...
Could you just
want to count the bug?
Oh, it depends if it's alive, right, that's
could
true also.
Could you rip off part of the leaf along?
You could rip off, that's what the Taz says, you go ahead.
I mean, it's the mission.
Yeah.
If your mouth says it's not a tarobis, then you may cook for Shabbos.
That's true. L'chora. L'chora, I don't know. It's an interesting question, right? As that famous Tumas Hadeshin points out, figuring out what's a tarobis focus boer is one of the most complicated things in all of Hochel Shabbos. I don't necessarily the definition of a tarobis for boer is not necessarily the same definition as a tarobis in terms of bittul, right? For example, everybody's going to there are lots of things. I mean, just to give an extreme example, right? If you have a yeah, I mean, like all sorts of small things. So very likely, not so small. There's nicker l'ayin, right? Are tarovas for Hochel Shabbos, peas and carrots, right? Mixed together. So most likely that's going to be a bowl of peas and carrots. It's definitely tarovas for Hochel's boer on Shabbos. Nobody's going to say that if you have flies the size of a pea mixed in with your food, that's a tarovas, right? So the fact that for Hilchos Shabbos, in terms of Borer, we'll call this a Tarovas, doesn't mean that for Hilchos Talayim, it will be considered a Tarovas. Yes?
Also, what would be the point at which
like it becomes, let's say it's a dressing with Caesar salad. I mean, you could still check, like it's shayach to find the bug, but just because the dressing should go whitish, so you wouldn't be able to see if there weren't. Like, it might be bugs which are covered up, but should you still do your best?
So that's a good question. That is a good question. You definitely do your best. The Chachmas Adam writes here that after all is said and done, make sure you eat with your eyes open. He writes, many times I've been saved from being nichshal by noting things as I'm about to put into my mouth. So of course you should do whatever you can do. That's pashut. The question is an interesting question. I'm not so sure. Let's say, are you chayev to, if you washed off the salad dressing from the lettuce, now you would be able to check it again. But you'd be mafsid, the salad dressing, and a lot of the salad and the like. At that point, are you chayev to do it? But I think it's pashut that what you can do now, you must do. So if so whatever you could do, you definitely have to do. That's part of this. If there's a mira matzo, you're chayev to do whatever bedika you can do. And so that, I think, is pashut. I don't know. I think you can make a strong case that that doesn't mean that you have to wash off the salad dressing. That at that point, the hefseid makes it such that that's not considered efsher bebedika. But where you draw the line, I agree, will be sometimes tricky.
This is just regarding the whole hagdara of lechatila b'diavad. This isn't, we're using this as a b'diavad, even though there are other, you could like just take out a food, etc. Meaning, just as long as it's already.
So that's what Josh was asking. It's a good question. Rabbi Shachter, we're going to get to this a little later. Rabbi Shachter would definitely say that you shouldn't in that case. So Rabbi Shachter would say that any time, and I'm going to tell you where he said something along those lines in just a minute, that's the next topic. But I believe from my conversations with Rabbi Shachter about this topic, he would say, yes, you should take something else. Going back to Josh's question, you shouldn't take more salad than necessary, and if you could choose between a potato kugel and broccoli kugel, so you should choose the potato kugel. That's what Rabbi Shachter would say. Because Rabbi Shachter understands that this is a general idea that you shouldn't do acts that might be problematic if you get away with doing acts that are not problematic, even if the klalim don't necessarily indicate that you would have to. That's the OU Svara for giving Hachshirim. You could argue, okay, that's true for Hachshir, but it's not true for my own Hanhaga, right? But Rabbi Shachter's Shita is, and that's is that you would say that, I believe. Again, I didn't ask him that specific question, but I'll tell you some of the questions I asked him, what he said, and I think one perhaps could extrapolate from what he said about those questions that he would agree in this case as well, that one should try to avoid these types of things. So let me get to that point.
So the Ran's thing about Dav Shish Matirin?
Not the Ran. In other words, it's in Rashi's sheet of Dav Shish Matirin, that Ashish Shah Tochlanu Besser Tochlanu Behatir.
No, but what he says about Pashafo, let's leave it on the Riff calls Dav Shish Matirin.
Right, okay. Similar point like that, yes. Maybe it would be similar to that point. Okay. So here's a very interesting question. So let's say I want to make broccoli kugel. And the way you make broccoli kugel is you take, the way I want to make it, is to take frozen broccoli and put it in a blender and then, add eggs and other ingredients. And let's assume for a moment that if I put it in the blender, then any birias will be bata. Right, Nisrasik. And therefore, the question is, am I allowed to do that l'chatchila? Can I go ahead? I will, instead of buying Bodek brand broccoli, frozen broccoli, I'll go buy ShopRite brand frozen broccoli. I think that frozen vegetables that don't need bedika generally don't need a hechsher, like string beans or something like that, assuming that there's no other ingredients in them, string beans or corn or peas or the like. So I want to go ahead and buy ShopRite brand frozen broccoli, and I'm going to throw it in the blender and the like. So should that be mutter? Or another example of this is pesto, right? So how do you make pesto? You buy these herbs, and you put them in the blender, and it chops them up really, really, really small, and you mix it onto your pasta. So is that okay? So you can make the following argument that it should be okay, really on two grounds. Number one is I'm not mechaven levatel, right? My goal is, even when Gaim make a broccoli kugel, not that that's ever happened, but theoretically, they would put it in a blender, right? So they're not mechaven levitel, or when they make pasto pesta, pesto pasta. Anyway, right? So you're not mechavin lebittel. It's like the jelly shayla that we discussed earlier. But alamai, you'll say no. Tataz efshar ben yinacher. Good. So now the question is: question one is the fact that I could buy a bag of bodek broccoli at twice the price. Is that efshar ben yinacher or no? Rabbi Willig didn't think that was considered efshar ben yinacher. Who could afford it? He said it was efshar ben yinacher. Efshar they got a raise? I don't know. Tell me how. Rabbi Schechter, though, Rabbi Schechter assumed, like you were saying, that this is definitely efshar ben yinacher. So according to the Taz, not definitely, but it would seem this is efshar ben yinacher, and therefore according to the Taz, maybe it should be machmir. However, there's another tzad lahakel over here, which is, you don't know that there's bugs in this bag of broccoli. Let's say there's a mira matzoi. So one out of every 10 ShopRite bags of frozen broccoli have a bug in them. But the one in front of me, I don't know if it has a bag. So this is like bittel iser lechatchila kasheinu mechavin levatlo, when you don't even know there's an iser here in the first place. So is that going to be usher? So this question is already discussed by the Rishonim. It's interesting. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says this svara, and he likes it. He quotes it from the Steich Emed and the Pri Toar. The truth is, though, I'm not sure why he doesn't quote the earlier sources. It's a Trumas Hadashen. It's quoted by the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach in Simen Pei Dalet Sif Mem discusses it. The question over there relates to doing tchina for flour when the wheat is infested. So now the question is as follows. When you go ahead and you use a big rechayim, so there's a lot of noise or vibrations, and the bugs tend to fly away a little bit. Whereas when it comes to a smaller rechayim, so they don't have as much. But there's a whole discussion in the Trumas Hadeshen about this question. But in the end of the day, the Trumas Hadeshen writes that you could be lenient because of basically these two reasons. That, first of all, you're not mechavein levatel, and moreover, you don't know if there's iser here in the first place, because maybe the bugs flew away before you put the wheat into the mill. And so it sounds like you could be makel. The problem is that the Shach, after quoting this, says, well, but if you could use a bigger mill, not a smaller mill, meaning to say the bigger mills are noisier and make it much more likely that the bugs are going to fly away, then you should. So maybe it would be usser. So Rabbi Schechter, and this is one of the reasons why I told you what I think. So Rabbi Schechter said, yeah, you could avoid the shayla. So even though it's true that this is, you're not mechavim levitel, and it's a suffix whether there's an isser here in the first place and the like, then still, if you could get bodeg broccoli, so then you should. So when it comes to pasta pesto, I don't know if they have bodeg pesto. I don't know how easy it is to check pesto. You could check it. So then Rabbi Schechter would say, so you should check your pesto and buy bodeg broccoli and the like. If you can't, right, like raspberry jelly or whatever, so then it would be okay. But as I mentioned before, Rabbi Schechter's general mahalich about this is that if you could avoid the shayla, even though there are good studim lahakel, but that's part of, you know, Al-Shusha Tochlan Obesha Tochlan Obehatar. Why should you, since there's a way of getting out of this problem, then you should. So, that is, as I said, when I asked the question very willing, he wouldn't even let me ask the question, because he said, let's assume there is a Miyad Hamatsui. And he said, what Miyad Hamatsui? I've never seen broccoli with a Miyad Hamatsui. I couldn't even ask the question, but Naniach, the Hanachos of the question, that there is a Mir Hamatsui and that they would get crushed up while broccoli still he thought that one could be made go. Yeah.
Could you rely on the fact that these they don't want bugs in their broccoli?
Well, we're going to talk about it. If there is. I mean, okay, if
they don't clean obviously as well. As
if there is a Mir Hamatsui, then there is a Mir Hamatsui. It doesn't matter that they don't want them to be there. They are. We'll talk about some percentages in a moment. Yeah.
If we're talking about bittul lechatchila here instead of the chash of eating it, so would that change all the shiuri bittul? Then is it if you're grinding 100 bags of broccoli at once, so then the question is, can you turn out the?
I could hear that. In other words, if the heter, that makes sense.
One piece of it at a time, everyone would be okay with.
That I can hear that. That seems reasonable. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the practical guidelines. So, as I said, I've been to a couple of OU presentations and demonstrations on checking vegetables and watched their video. And they said something in these presentations that I found very surprising. They said, let's take romaine lettuce. So their suggestion for romaine lettuce is you cut off the bottom, you break up the leaves, you put them in soapy water, or you could use soap, or you could use vegetable wash. Vegetable wash is the same thing as soap, it just doesn't have as much of a soapy taste in it. And you agitate it, you rinse it, you let it sit there for 5 minutes, you wash it out under a heavy stream, making sure that you put each individual leaf and all parts of the leaf under the stream. Sometimes tricky because romaine lettuce leaves sometimes fold over in the back, so you have to put each leaf under the stream. And if you do this, you'll never find a bug. And the person making this presentation said, I've done this, you know, thousands of times and I never found a bug. And then after you've done all that, then you should check them in a light box. So I said, 1 second, you just told me you'll never find a bug. Why in the world do you have to check it afterwards? So, in other words, there's no chiyuv bedikah. This is totally effective. So they gave two answers to this question when asked at two different times. Different people. So one, the answer that I was told was yes, but there's a chovas bedikah that's chal on the vegetable. So, in other words, before I started washing, there was a vihamatsui of bugs on this romaine lettuce, and even though I've done a procedure to make it not a mira matsui, so the chovas bedika remains, and therefore, let's assume for the moment that it's not even 100% effective. Let's assume that it will go down to 5% infestation. So for the moment, we'll talk about zero in a moment, afterwards. But let's assume for a moment you go down from 15% infestation to 5% infestation. So they said, look, there was a chiyuv bedika, and just because now there's no longer a chovas bedika, now there's no longer 10%, but that chiyuv bedika isn't paka, and therefore you're still chayiv. Now, that's a very big chiddush. Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes a mashal. He doesn't have that tzad, but in discussing it, he says, l'mashal ma davar domer, we find for bedikas chametz, that a chatzer, you don't have to do bedika. Why? Because orvin mitzuyim sham, the birds will eat the bread. Great. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, so 1 second. My house, before Erev Pesach, after it's been cleaned thoroughly, is a lot cleaner than a chatzer. Chances of finding crumbs in your chatzer are much greater than chances of finding crumbs in your living room after it's been vacuumed and thoroughly cleaned for Pesach. So why do I have to check? So Shlomo Zalman says, why do you have to check? Because there's a chovas bedika. And now, even though, in other words, there was never a chovas bedika chal on the chatzer in the first place. So therefore, why? Because Orvin Mitzuyim Sham, and therefore, I don't check it. But here there's a chovas bedika chal, and then I have to check it, at least for bedikas chametz. Now he admits that it's a jump from bedikas chametz, where clearly there is a chovas bedika, to tolayim, where it's not clear that there's a chovas bedika, and it's not clear what the nature of the bedika is, and it seems unlikely that the bedika would be on the chatzah, not on the gavra. But that being stated, at least you have a paradigm for that type of model. So I mentioned that to Rabbi Willig as well, and he said, ah, Shlomo Zalman, that was his reductio ad absurdum. I disagree with that also. I think there's no chiyuv bedikas chametz in that case. Thinks that really, after we clean our houses for Pesach, it's a real brach, safek bracha shayla, if you can make a bracha on bedika. So the only reason why it's not too bad to make a bracha on the bedika is because we put out the 10 crumbs. It's exactly the opposite of what's usually assumed. Usually people think that you have to put out the crumbs because if you don't find any chametz, it's a bracha levatala. No. If your house actually was not cleaned, even if you don't end up finding any crumbs, that's not a bracha levatala. You did your mitzvah. It doesn't matter whether you find crumbs or not. But our houses aren't chayiv in bedikas chametz, assuming that we clean them very well and thoroughly before Erev Pesach. So there's no chayiv bedika. So it's actually very important to put out the crumbs, because without the crumbs, it might be makom sheino badu. Okay, but what about for bugs? So I saw that the OU has a document from Rabbi Belsky, document C67, where he says that you don't, the mira matzah should be after washing, not before washing. And he gives three reasons for this. Number one is washing is part of the ordinary and usual preparation of food product grown in a natural environment. Only after the food is ready for use can it be measured for infestation. The dirt that it brings in from the field in no way affects its halachic status. Number two, the chiyuv bedika is obligatory. You don't have to do bedika. You just have to make sure that there aren't any bugs. So if you wash it, or you do sinan or the like, then that is removes the chiyuv bedika. And finally, he writes, there's no such thing as a chiyuv bedika on a vegetable. Only isurim, such as tevel or kilei kerem, can be chal on vegetables. Chiyuvim are only chal on people. And the chiyuv bedika is chal on the user who must first make a bedika before eating the product, if it is determined at that time to have a mir hamatzoi. The obligation is chal when the person is ready to use the food, which in our case is after washing. So according to Rabbi Belsky, maybe his first two svaros, you could say if it goes down from 10 to 5, you would still be chayev. But according to his third svara, which I think he sounds like he thinks is correct, so even if it went, even washing didn't bring it down to zero, washing it brought it below a mir hamatzoi, then that would be okay. So after finding this document, we went back to the OU to ask them the question again, since internally this was a problem. So this time Shmuel Kretsch asked the question, and they said, you're right. The reason why we tell everybody to check the romaine lettuce after doing this procedure is because we're concerned that they didn't check properly. They didn't wash it properly. It's a gzeira, meaning to say that maybe they didn't do the washing properly, and therefore there still is a mir hamatzoi, and therefore we say you should check it anyway. That seems to be a big chiddush. There is a tshuva from the Igros Moshe. Seems to be very makel on these shailas, but it's from Ches. You could, I sent it in the notes. I don't know what to do with that, but we don't have time to go into it now. So the next very important question that we have to deal with is what size bugs are we talking about? And a lot of the modern shailas come down to the following questions. Everybody's going to agree that if you could see the bug with your naked eyes and see that it is a bug, it's going to be usher to eat, right? And everybody's also going to agree that microscopic bugs, meaning say they could only be seen with magnification, are not problematic. Nobody thinks that you have to be worried about bacteria on your food. I mean, maybe for other reasons, but not in terms of DNA toline. So the question is in the middle, and there are actually... I heard a shiur from this from Reb David Cohn. Reb David Cohn, now of the CRC, formerly the Safra Dedina of the OU, a very excellent posek in matters of kashrus and especially toloim. So he pointed out that there are three middle cases in between the two extremes which the poskim debate. Case number one is that you could see them, you could see the bugs when the bugs are dead, but you can't see that they're bugs. However, so how do you know that they're bugs? You could tell that they are bugs when they're alive, and you could also tell that these are the same things that you saw when they're alive. So maybe copepods would be an example of this. Copepods, when they're alive, are quite readily visible. Not because you could see their head or their feet or their antenna, they're much too small for that with the naked eye, but they sort of dance around in the water, they bounce around, it's pretty cute to look at them, and you basically notice them. You'll see this. You sometimes go to a lake and you look at the side of the lake, you'll see like things bouncing around, so that might be what these are. So they're very small, but when they're dead, if you go ahead and you look in your glass of water, the copepods, while dead, look like fluff. They look sort of like dandruff, a little white fluff. At least I couldn't tell that they're bugs looking at them when they're dead. And you could tell they're bugs if you look at them with magnification. But
you can see them in the water.
You could see them in the water. Now we'll talk about that in a moment, but yes, you could see them in the water. When the whole scandal first came out, so I tried checking my water a couple of times and I couldn't find any. And then once I took a undershirt and I folded it up several times under the sink, making a filter, and I ran the water for about 10 minutes. And then I took that undershirt and shook it up in a glass, clear glass, and held the glass up to a good light source. And then you could see these little white Now that was a lot of gallons of water that made got all these things. And I've never seen a copepod by actually pouring a glass of water in a sink and looking at it in the light. But doing it this way, you can find a bunch of white little specks, which you could tell are copepods if you magnify them. If you look under a microscope, then you could see that they are in fact bugs. So here's the question. So I could see them when they're dead, but I can't see that they're bugs. So that's the question. But when they were alive, I could see that they were bugs, not because they're any bigger when they're alive, but because I could tell that they're bugs when they're bouncing around. And maybe, I'm not sure this is true either, but at least the Machmirim argue that once you see them when they're alive, you could tell that the things that you see floating around in your cup are copepods. Because you sort of get a tvias ayin as to what they are, and then you could tell. So that's the first case. That's actually the most Machmir of the three middle categories. So what's the halacha? So some try to bring a raya from Rashi and Erevin, Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, they have to be Machmir. Rashi over there defines as sheretz, lashon sheretz, davar shehu nad ba'aretz, ve'eno nira ela al yedei shirutso v'richusho mipnei kopno. So it sounds like Rashi's describing exactly this case. Eino nicker, you could only tell that it's a bug because al yedei shirutso v'richusho. Now that doesn't tell me it's still lasher when it's dead, but at least when it's alive, that is the definition of a sheretz. Something that's so small that you could only identify it as a bug if it's moving. Now, this is a raya that is brought from the poskim, though it's not a good raya, I don't think. Rashi might be talking about an ant, right? If I stand up and I look on the ground, I see a black dot. I don't know what it is. And if I see it start walking, I see, oh, that's an ant. But if I were to look at the ant closely from 12 inches, I could see that it's a bug. I could see its head and antennas and feet. So who says Rashi's talking about something that is only nicker at 10 inches as a bug al yedei richusho? Maybe it's 6 feet away, right? Not that I'm 6 feet tall. But the point is that that it's not clear that this is what Rashi's talking about. But that is a raya that some posts can bring. Another raya that they try to bring is from the Shulchan Aruch, I'll just do it, Simen Pei Dal at Siv Vav. The Rama there writes, Upamim nimtza be pri kimin nikuda shchora v'humakom shemaschil hatolas lehisrakeim v'tzarech litlo misham be'omek de'aser kimo atolas atmo. So, sounds like you have a fruit, and the fruit has this black dot on it. And you can't tell that the black dot is a bug, but you still have to remove it. In other words, even though the Rama says all this is a nikuda shchora, right, so this doesn't look like a bug, it looks like a black dot, but since we know it's a bug, so then you have to remove it. Sounds like the Rama is saying that things that we know to be bugs, even if they are not visible or you can't tell that they're bugs, are still awesome. Now then you could wonder, so how did the Rama know it's a bug? Right? He didn't have a microscope. So if you look at, and there are those that bring this Rama's raya to all the cases. Anytime it's visible, though never not at all discernible as a bug, it's always usher. The problem with this makor is that if you look at the Tshuva Sarashba, which is the makor for this Rama, it's pretty clear that this isn't so small. First of all, the Tshuva Sarashba does say v'zeh katan me'od me'od. Okay, sounds good. Seems like this is a tzad l'hachmir. But he writes that we didn't actually know this was a bug, except for acharei kama pe'amim umenichen oso al hatziporen ha'etzba v'hu rochesh v'holet. In other words, we could actually see it moving. So at the very least, you could tell it's a bug while moving. So it's not a riot to all the cases. At best, it's a riot to the case where richusho nicker. But then, he also mentions v'nikar rosho shel arechesh v'gufo eno nicker. Sounds like it's saying you could actually see the head. You can't see the guf because it's sort of buried inside the fruit, which case it's really not that small if you could determine the head, see the head. So it's true, he says it's katan me'od me'od. But knowing what katan me'od me'od is, not so clear. So this raya also is not going to be the best raya lahachmir in the shayla. Yeah?
Magnifying glasses and glasses in general.
So the pashup shot is you would follow normal vision. So the fact that I happen to have terrible vision without glasses isn't going to help me. I can't take off my glasses and start looking at the vegetables, right?
I
don't know. I think we would assume that if it's visible with 20/20 vision, then it would be a problem. If visible as a bug, again, our question is if it's visible but not as a bug. But if it's visible as a bug for 20/20 vision, the pashtus is you're not going to, it will be awesome. Okay.
I feel like one of the things though, I think it was a question, because you took a cup of water and put it in the sun.
And Achanan, that's.
Doesn't the glass magnify the water?
That's an interesting question. It might, I don't know. But. You could see, you see them also even if you look down into the if you look into it from the top, like in a petri dish or something like that, you could still see them. Again, you can't see that they're bugs, but you could see that they're not. Now, some of them we'll talk about more in a moment. So some poskim try to bring a raya that many of the poskim were very machmir about these milavins, which are mites, and mites are very small. The problem is, again, you can't have a raya from that. There are 10,000 species of mites. Who knows which ones they were concerned about? They vary substantially in terms of size. So it's very hard to know for sure on this topic. Ravazner has a tshuva. It's in tshuva Shevet Alevi, Chelak Zayin, Yoredeya, Kuf Chaf Beis. And he writes that the fact that this is visible does not pose a problem. Basically, he argues that the person's vision—it's not that the person's vision that brings about the iser; it's the microscope that brings about the iser. Meaning, say, until microscopes were invented, nobody knew these were bugs, right? Because again, to the naked eye, you can't tell that they're bugs; you could see them. So, what made it usher? The microscope? That's impossible. Rav Schechter—this was the initial view of Rav Shlomo Zalman, as we'll see in this shortly. There are some that claim Rav Shlomo Zalman changed his mind when he heard that the Chazon Ish was machmir. That's a debate about what Rav Shlomo Zalman held. If you look, there's a discussion about that in the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa. But Rav Schechter originally was also Makel on the Shaila, and he thought you could be Makel based off of the famous Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish writes that there were 2,000 years of Tohu, 2,000 years of Torah, 2,000 years of Mashiach, and what that basically means is that what was Isser and Heter was Nikba Bizman Matan Torah, and that remains permanent. So the famous application of that is with respect to trefos, where perhaps something originally couldn't last for 12 months and it could, or the reverse. Famous machlokas, Rambam and Rashba and the like. But the Chazon Ish there says that even if, let's say, with respect to trefos, the metzias changed, but since this was not nikba as a trefa, bizman matan Torah, it still wouldn't be a trefa. So since b'shas matan Torah, this would not be a bug, Rav Schechter says. Why? Because nobody could have ever seen this without magnification, and at Matan Torah nobody had magnification, so therefore it can't become a bug in the 20th century. So that's what Rav Schechter said originally. But as I said, the Chazon Ish is machmir. This is Yoredeya Simon Hay Os Gimel and Evan Hazer Chav Zayin Os Gimel. No. Rabbi Schechter used the Chazon Ish's logic by trefos to apply it to bugs.
So he doesn't.
The Chazon Ish himself doesn't use his own logic.
Yeah.
Okay. So you it's a good svara. What? You know how the Chazon Ish works. So, as I said, Rav Neuwirth says that even though Rav Shlomo Zalman was originally Makel, upon hearing that the Chazon Ish was Machmir, he changed his mind. Some say that's not what he meant. He meant to say that he thought, oh, that's interesting. He didn't actually change his mind. So Shaila. Rav Yashiv is definitely Machmir. It seems like Rav David Feinstein is Machmir as well in his letter about copepods. Now, as I mentioned before, the truth is that there are three types of Shailas. Many poskim are more machmir when visible when alive, even if not identifiable as when dead. That's based off of the Ben Avram, Chelek Nun, or Simen Nun Os Chaf Mem Beis. The Ben Avram is Mako, machmir in that case, and Rav Schechter thinks that is the correct halacha. So if they're visible when alive, even if as dead, they're visible as bugs, noticeable as bugs when alive, and visible when dead, then they remain usher. Their dying doesn't take away the isser. Rav Belsky thought that the Ben Avram would be Mako by copepods, because Ben Avraham was only machmir when you know there are these bugs in the water. But since nobody knows there are bugs in the water, when you have a cup of water and you can't tell that there are bugs by looking at it, so then he thought that even the Ben Avraham might be mako. Now the other two cases are, you can't see that there are bugs when alive or when dead. However, once you could tell that they're bugs through magnification, then you could tell that these are the same things that you know to be bugs. And there's some poskim that are machmir about that. That's where the Chazon Ish is machmir. And then there's a third case, which is a big machlokas, whether even the Chazon Ish would be machmir, which is, you can't tell that they're bugs without magnification. And with magnification, you could see they're bugs. And without magnification, you could see that they're here. But you can't even tell that these are the things that you could tell are bugs with magnification. In other words, they look like a dot. They don't look like different than other dots. This question, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, there was a whole controversy about the strawberries and the raisins and this and that. So they related to the question of whether these were category 2 or category 3. Apparently, some people with these larvae that are found in certain things, they were real mumchen, and if you're trained enough, you could identify which ones of these little dots that are nearly invisible are bugs and which ones aren't. So you could only... So that's part of the question. So this is a discussion in the poskim. As I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of limudei schus on these types of questions in the poskim. One of the reasons is because, nowadays things are much better than they used to be, as bad as things might be. So there's a Tshuvas Chassam Ksav Sofer Simen Samach Gimel, who says, well, at least b'toras limud schus, we have the placi that we mentioned before. It's not tchilas b'yaso b'iser, plus the sheet of the Rif and Rashi. We'll talk about that in Simen Kofala, but the Rif and Rashi might not hold that Biri is not batal, because the Mishnah of Odazar is against the Mishnah of Chulin, and we pass them like the Sigur b'Makomo. So according to the Rif and Rashi, Biri is our betela, plus you throw in 960, and you could be mako. And to the Aruch HaShulchan, as other Svaros as well. And basically, they said, look, this is Eifshar, lo nitna tor l'malach ha'sharis, it's Eifshar to be mako, to be machmir, and Yishalos will have nothing to eat. And therefore, they look for limudei schus. Rav Willig says the tides have turned. Instead of being a chumra, she'ein atzibur yichol l'amod bo, it's a kula, she'ein atzibur yichol l'amod bo. Because anytime you tell people what the halacha is, they yell at you, and they scream at you, and they say, that can't be possibly correct. So this relates to the question that we were talking about before, which is, how common are these? So, I don't know. In the vegetables that I've checked, maybe I'm a bad checker, I don't know, but I most of the time, I have never found things close to a mir hamatsui. Now, you have to check, if you hold the machmir shitos of mir hamatsui, it's true, you do have to check quite a lot to figure out whether it's a mir hamatsui. But ma'isa shayi kachaya, when I was at the OU kashrus camp, and there were probably, I don't know, 60, 80 people, I think, they brought in a whole big array of vegetables, and broccoli, and cauliflower, and romaine lettuce, and iceberg lettuce, and they had, I don't know, 60, 80 people checking for 45 minutes to an hour, and with lots of light boxes and the like, and I think that 3 bugs were found in total. So that's not very many. Now, I remember if we want to have a demonstration, this is a good vart. So after that, I came home from took the train home, and I was so excited because my wife, like, she loves broccoli, and you know, we never had a havamina that we could, you know, buy fresh broccoli. So now that I was trained to buy broccoli, I came home, and on Nicholas Avenue, you know, they have all those fruit stores, and I brought some broccoli. I was with Ruven Brandt, we both brought, and we got home, and we checked it, and sure enough, it was infested. So that's the answer. The answer is that a lot of it has to do with grade A, grade B, grade C. So as I said, if we want to do a demonstration, if you really want to find bugs, you buy stuff in our neighborhood. And the chances of infestation are going to be much higher. And that really is part of the question. Though I should tell you that it wasn't hard to find the bugs in the broccoli. You could have done it yourself. You didn't see them if you didn't separate the florets. But once you separated the florets and you looked carefully, they were pretty visible. Now, if you would have cooked them, you might not have noticed them as much, because...
Within each floret?
No, even if you opened up three or four times, you would have seen them. Five or six times. I don't remember how long it took me to do it. The OU says you should parboil it, and that makes them a little more flexible. I don't even think you need to. I mean, they're not. You could do it without it, but it probably does make it easier.
You do need to open every single floret?
No, not every single. Well, if you want to get a good. You don't have to open every floret to get to see the whole thing.
No, so I'm saying, like, let's say you open three florets and you don't find any.
So that's a question that relates to chazaka checks. There's a big machlokas that poskim about chazaka checks. It might be talked about in Shulchan Aruch, even though that's not clear. The OU policy is that chazaka checks, if allowed, have to be on a large sampling. Meaning to say, it doesn't just mean looking at three leaves, it means like three crates. So it's relevant on a commercial scale, possibly, when you have 10 crates of broccoli, so then maybe you could check three crates and that would be enough if you could assume they all came from the same source. But it doesn't. I don't think anyone's going to necessarily say that if you look at three times on a single thing and you don't find that would be enough. Where, again, if doing chazaka checks, where, how much of a sampling you have to do is an unclear question that the poskim rule differently upon. One last point: copepods in the water. So, do they exist? So first of all, as you all know, nobody ever discovered these until pretty recently. It was discovered by someone who bought Gush Katif lettuce, but he was very machmir, so he checked it anyway. And he kept on finding bugs. He called them up. He said, this is supposed to be bug-free. Every time I look at it, I find bugs. So they told him, can't be, must be, you have bugs in your water. Sure enough, that was the case. So how common are they? How prevalent are they in New York City? So New York City did some testing, the DEP, and the samples really vary significantly, anywhere from 0 to 22 per liter. The average liter in New York has 9 copepods. Whoa, that sounds pretty bad. However, largest sampling in Brooklyn, of course. Now, the problem with that measurement is that they were using a filter of 500, what's UM?
Microliters.
500, what's the difference between a microliter and a micron?
Okay,
same thing. Micrometer. Okay, good. 500 micrometers. Now, 500 micrometers have nothing to do with what you could actually see. For purposes of halachic filtration, a 50 micron would be enough. Even you might not even need that small. So, unfortunately, nobody could convince the DEP to do halachic testing. And therefore, their testing doesn't help us very much. But basically, it really varies a lot. Different parts of the city, different times of year, with no noticeable pattern, at least one that anyone could figure out. And that's really one of the problems. There still is quite a lot of suffix here as to how much they are and whether there's a Mir HaMatzoi. As I said, my personal testing, I did find them in Washington Heights, but only after I ran the sink for 10 minutes. But again, maybe I wasn't such a good tester. Yeah?
The last point that you just made, that halakhically you only need 50 microns?
500 microns. Why is 500 more than 50? I don't understand. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
The screens.
Anyway, so they're too small. In other words, the filters that the DEP used to check for the copepods were such small filters that they picked up all sorts of things that you couldn't see. It's not just that you can't see that they're bugs. You can't see them. The human eye couldn't see them.
Wouldn't it be the other way around?
Yeah.
The bigger the holes, the smaller holes you'll get more bugs.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I'll read to you, I had that question myself, but I'll read to you. So there's an excellent article by Rabbi David Shabtai on the topic of copepods, and I'll read you what he wrote. I was wondering about that.
He'll be here tonight.
He's here tonight, so you can tell him he's quoted. Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So the way Rashi uses it. So As of now, it seems that no conclusion can be drawn about the absolute concentration of copepods at the faucet. It is clear, however, that studies of copepod populations and their seasonal cyclings in the reservoir has little to do with their presence in tap water. First, the independent studies performed by the Orthodox Union were scientifically imprecise, with no proper protocol for obtaining, analyzing, or quantifying the finds. Second, the DEP analysis used 500 micrometer mesh filters to obtain their samples. The human eye can distinguish between objects much smaller. Oh, I read it wrong. Thank you. The human eye can distinguish between objects much smaller than that, and copepods smaller than 500 micrometers are halachically meaningful. Last, it must be understood. So I said that wrong. Thank you. Okay, good. It's good to read it the second time. Anyhow, basically, his article, concludes with that there really is a safek. And that's why some poskim are meiko. Some poskim say, look, I don't know whether my water has a mir hamatzah or not. I can't figure that out. It's too hard for me to figure out. And like we said before, safek mir hamatzah, you could be meiko. Especially because, in this case, where you could really argue it's certainly a taroves, it's only a shaila of birya. Again, there's much more of a reason to suspect that. It's much harder to see a copepod than it is to see an aphid on lettuce.
You should be definitely
able
to cook it, no?
So, what about cooking? So, this too, I'll read you from Rabbi Shabtai's article. The answer is cooking does not always help. Boiling water, if boiling water to render copepods no longer completely intact, this practice would be permitted by the Mechaber and prohibited by the Ramah. He's assuming that since it's a Dursa de Rabbanan, you couldn't do it. However, the boiling may also render the copepods no longer nicker, and therefore the permissibility of this action for the Mechaber would depend on the aforementioned disagreement whether nicker Isser presents a Torah or rabbinic prohibition. The Ran, however, says if you're not Mechaving to do it, it's okay. V'chulei v'chulei. So he says maybe that would be okay. And his conclusion of the article, precise studies with adequate controls are necessary to determine precisely what temperatures and how much agitation is necessary to render all copepods no longer intact. These studies have not been done. This article was written, I think, a number of years ago. I still think they haven't been done.
You said how does it make if it's deformed, even if it's not
Yeah. That's correct. So that's a question. So that's true. A lot of times it's just the exoskeleton because the chlorine gets the middle stuff out. There are a couple of other interesting makilim for copepods. They tell you that if it's nisraf, it's mutter, and a chlorination is a clear, whether a chlorination is like nisraf. All right. But with that in mind, I wish you all a lot of hatzlacha. Now, one last question. Somebody asked, told me that they didn't think that they would be finished chazara on time for Sunday. Is that something that a lot of people feel? No. Great. So the Bechina is still on Sunday. What time on Sunday? Whenever you get it from Mordechai sometime Sunday morning. Here's what I was thinking of doing. I haven't decided yet, but maybe on Monday we'll go through the Bechina and talk about it also. That way, I think it's, I won't be able to grade it quickly, but I think it's important to think about the Bechina when it's still fresh, and not just, so maybe we'll go over it on Monday. Anyway. You'll see, the longer answers you can, the short answers and multiple choice sections you can't.
Okay. The Marcus Chaim, by the way, says that